Hey there. If you like this podcast, you are going to love my new book, Needy, How to Advocate for Your Needs and Reclaim Your Sovereignty. In Needy, I share my unique approach to identifying, honoring, and advocating for the most tender and true parts of yourself that are yearning to be acknowledged. It is an invitation to embody self-acceptance, which leads to meaningful growth in self-responsibility, self-care, self-trust, and self-love. All of the themes that we talk about all of the time on this podcast. Woven with threads of timeless wisdom, honest assessments of our needs, and heartfelt personal stories of transformation from yours truly and others, Needy illustrates a profound vision for what is possible when you listen to the stirrings of your heart and reclaim your undisputed sovereignty in your life. Now, you can get Needy wherever books are sold, but if you are a podcast super fan, you might appreciate the audiobook, which I do narrate, which you can find on Audible. Now, on to today's show. Hey there, it's your host, Mara Glatzel, and you are listening to the Needy Podcast. Here at Needy, we are devoted to sharing frank conversations and true stories about what it means to meet your needs consistently, messily, and sustainably. Needy is a listener-funded podcast. Your contributions enable us to continue bringing you the delicious conversations you adore without advertisement or interruption. To become a member of the Needy Inner Circle and to get information about today's episode, dance on over to theneedypodcast.com. Now, on to today's show. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Needy Podcast. I am so excited to be here today with today's guest, Melissa Urban. Melissa just came out with a book on boundaries that is so fabulous, and I had the distinct honor of getting to read the book ahead of time, so I'm just thrilled to get to share her work with you and to have her answer some of our Needy Inner Circle community's pressing questions about boundaries. Melissa is CEO of The Whole 30 and an authority on helping people create lifelong healthy habits. She is a six-time New York Times bestselling author, including the number one bestseller, The Whole 30, and has been featured by The Today Show, Good Morning America, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and CNBC. She lives with her husband, son, and poodle named Henry in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome, Melissa. I'm so excited to have you here.
Mara, I have been so excited for this conversation as well. So thank you for asking.
Before we get into you and your needs and your boundaries, I would love to just, if there's a person on earth who doesn't know who you are, I'm not sure. But for that person, who are you? What do you do? Why do you do what you do?
Yeah, well, my name is Melissa Urban. I'm best known for being the co-founder and CEO of The Whole 30, which is a 30-day self-experiment designed to help people identify the foods that work best for them and really reset their health habits and relationship with food. So that's kind of, I think, where most people will know me from. But, you know, in addition to that, I'm a mom of one fantastic 9-year-old boy. I'm a wife. I'm an avid hiker. I read like most people breathe. And I have interests that I talk about on my personal website and Instagram channel, the biggest of which right now include the subject of boundaries, setting and holding healthy boundaries, and the freedoms that those boundaries can bring in every area of your life.
Mm, so good. I feel like there is not a topic that is more misbranded than boundaries. Mm. People, we all need them. Most of us don't even know what they are or how to set them. And I feel so privileged to have gotten to read an advanced copy of your book, which is fantastic. Have you always known how to set boundaries?
Thank you so much. When you sent me your kind of advanced thoughts on the book, I did a legitimate happy dance, like an actual happy dance in my living room. It meant so much. No, I was not born knowing how to set boundaries. Most of us weren't. Dare I say, all of us weren't. You know, this is one of those super important life skills, like financial management or communication that we're not taught in school. We're almost never modeled by our parents or our families. We're not taught in the workplace. And when you discover boundaries, it's this like game changer for your self-confidence and your relationships. But I very much had to learn the hard way, along with, I think, you know, everybody else, where I found myself in my 20s in a really precarious position and recognized that the only way I was going to be able to protect my physical health, my mental health, in that moment, my very life, was to set an actual boundary. And that was the start of my journey post-drug addiction in my recovery, realizing that boundaries were going to be the key not only to my recovery, but to making my life bigger and more expansive than I ever imagined.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I would love to know from you kind of like what a boundary is and what a boundary isn't. But I think one of the things that really strikes me around boundaries is that we think that boundaries limit us instead of create this vast openness of consent and open communication and the ability to thrive in our relationships. And it's amazing how we think it's this really confining ultimatum sort of conversation we don't want to have that's guaranteed to, you know, evoke a conflict. We get so much wrong about boundaries.
We do. Boundaries have been really misunderstood and maybe even misbranded by the people who benefit from us having none. So, you know, I think a lot of people think that boundaries are selfish or mean, and they are nothing of the sort. Boundaries are, in fact, kind. People aren't mind readers. We should not expect them to know where our limits lie or the way that they can engage with us in a way that keeps us safe and healthy. The way that we communicate that with the people we love and the people we care about is by setting and holding clear boundaries. I think people think that boundaries are about controlling someone else's behavior. I set a boundary to tell you what to do. And again, that's not at all the truth. In fact, that's not even possible. We know that you can't control someone else's behavior. A boundary is not about telling someone else what to do. It is about telling them what we will do to hold our own limits around our time, our energy, our mental health, our money, our physical space. So I think those are two really big misconceptions about boundaries that when you reframe them, you realize that boundaries are a gift. They are an invitation to the people you love, the people who you want in your life, to show up in your life in a way that works for both of you, in a way that keeps you both safe and healthy in an environment of trust and mutual respect, and the kind of clear and kind communication that boundaries evoke is truly a gift to give you some of the healthiest relationships, whether it's a friendship or a relationship with a boss or a colleague or a co-parent or a romantic partner. Boundaries are what will make that relationship healthier and happier and thrive.
Yes, absolutely. As you were speaking, something that I was thinking about was being on the receiving end of somebody who has really impeccable boundaries is, for me, it's such a relief to know that I can trust you. So for example, like I can trust you, I can email you and ask you for a thing, and I'm going to know that you're going to say yes or no based on your capacity. And I can totally trust in receiving whatever you say yes to, because I know that's how you operate.
Yes. Honestly, your yeses mean more when you learn how to say no, because you know now, because I'm not afraid to say no. If you said, hey, I would love you to do the, can you appear on my podcast? And if I didn't have capacity or the emotional energy or the time, I would say, I really appreciate the invitation, but it's not something I can accommodate right now. Now, the next time you ask me something and I say yes, you know I'm not saying yes resentfully or begrudgingly or because I think I have to. You know that my yes is a genuine yes. So that clear and kind communication, I keep borrowing this phrase that is in Brené Brown's book, Dare to Lead, which she so graciously allowed me to use in the Book of Boundaries. But this clear is kind communication is like such a game changer for any relationship, including the relationship you have with your professional colleagues.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a few boundary questions from the needy audience that I would love to share with you. Everyone was so excited to get your take on things. And I want to just put in a plug for your weekly newsletter, because something that I heard from every single person who submitted a question was how much they get out of your newsletter every single week, especially when it comes to the examples that you share of how boundaries show up. And of course, in the book, you share so many, but that you have a real knack for responding to your audience and creating content that is so useful. So if you're not on Melissa's newsletter list, I read it. I read very few newsletters. I read it every single week. It's so good. And aww. Many of you are big fans as well.
Thank you. That means so much. I write, you know, I write all my own stuff. I don't use a ghostwriter, and maybe someday I will. But for now, writing is the thing, the part of my job that I enjoy the most. And I'm not willing to give that up or outsource that to anyone else. And I write this newsletter fresh every single week. And I love it. And I really do pour myself into it. And I tell people every week on Instagram, you should subscribe because my newsletter is really good. And I love hearing people's experience that matches what I think of my own, you know, of my own work product. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's satisfying.
Yeah.
You think it's good and so do I.
Yeah.
All right. So a theme that came up a lot in the questions had to do with how do we hold boundaries with ourselves? And it showed up in a couple of different ways, but this first one I thought was so good, and I'll just read it out loud. I find it really hard to keep promises to myself when times are challenging, even when I know that it will help me to keep taking really good care of myself. How do you set boundaries with yourself and strike a balance between holding yourself accountable to your promises while also being compassionate about your compromised capacity?
Mm-hmm. So there's I wrote an entire chapter in the Book of Boundaries on this concept of self-boundaries, because in some ways, setting a boundary with yourself is easy. The only person you need to rely on to respect that boundary is yourself, right? So you're not trying to convince your pushy mother-in-law or your toxic coworker that this is the best way to engage with you, the healthiest way. You're only talking to yourself. So in that aspect, a self-boundary can be easier. But in many ways, it's so much harder because the only person you're setting the boundary with is yourself, which means if you disrespect the boundary, the only person who's going to know is you. So you tell yourself, I'm going to go to bed early tonight because when I stay up late and just binge out on Netflix, I get mad at myself for that behavior. I get frustrated with myself for not taking care of my, you know, self-care and getting to bed early. I go to bed late. I wake up tired. I miss my workout in the morning, which just makes me not feel my best. Okay, that's your self-boundary. You're going to go to bed late. But what happens when you do go to bed late instead of going to bed early? Like, you might think about it and say, well, nothing happens. I'm the only one who knows. Nobody is going to hold me accountable but myself. And the only thing that happens is that I go to bed late. So it can be really challenging to hold a boundary with yourself. Furthermore, it can start to feel like your own self-boundaries are like a punishment if you don't word them or think about them carefully. So I think about moms, for example. I'm a mom. You're a mom. Sometimes the only time we get to ourselves is between when our kid goes to bed and when we go to bed. And as much as I want to go to bed early, it can feel really hard to put myself to bed early because I feel like I'm depriving myself of these different activities that I either could do or should do. And this is the only downtime that I have. So when I talk about self-boundaries, I think a lot about thinking about future me. You will hear the phrase future you in the Book of Boundaries often. And what you really need to do in terms of the consequences of not holding a self-boundary is not think about, well, what happens in the moment? Because what happens in the moment is I just stay up late and watch another half hour of Netflix. But what happens to future me is far more severe of a consequence. So in thinking about a self-boundary, what happens to future me? Well, okay, future me is going to go to bed mad at myself for not practicing my self-care. I'm going to be exhausted and maybe have that tired and wired feeling, which I know I don't like and leads to a worse night's sleep. I'm going to wake up tomorrow, maybe late, maybe feeling cranky without the energy to work out, and I'm not going to like waking up and not moving my body. That's not going to make me feel my best. And that is not going to start my day off in a way that works really well for me, which may cascade into my mood and my focus and my productivity and how I talk to myself for the rest of my day. So when you phrase it like that, future you is going to be seriously negatively impacted by this decision. Then I like to take it one step further. If I hold this promise to myself, and there's a whole nother conversation to be had about why you are worthy of holding this promise to yourself, what freedoms will I gain from holding this boundary? And when I think about it like that, now all of a sudden, I will be free to get to bed at an hour that I know is taking the best care of me. I will be free to not, you know, luxuriate in bed for that extra 10 minutes and maybe read a book or listen to a guided meditation, a practice that I really enjoy, knowing that that is contributing to a good night's sleep. I'll be free to get a better night's sleep and sleep longer and deeper. I will be free to wake up in the morning with more energy, more vitality, more enthusiasm for whatever I want to do that morning, whether it's a workout or a walk or journaling, or maybe even just getting 10 extra minutes of sleep. I'll know that I'm doing that by choice instead of by necessity. And I will be free to craft exactly the kind of day I want to have for myself for tomorrow, knowing that I have nurtured my body and my mind and my spirit in this moment. When you put it like that, it is like, okay, this is not just a, I'm going to go to bed earlier. This decision has real impact and real value on my life and how I talk to myself and view myself and care for myself, and will have an immediate and enormous impact on future me. And I will look back on this and be so grateful for the freedoms that I have given myself with this one small decision. That's how I want people to start thinking about boundaries with yourself. Mm.
While you were saying that, I was thinking that the underpinning of that too is the future you matters, that the quality of your life matters, that your personal experience, even if nobody else knows whether you stayed up late or whether you're tired, that your experience of being inside of your own body, inside of your own life matters.
Yes. And that is one small way that you can simply honor your own need, that you can connect with yourself, check in with yourself, and honor your own need. It seems like something really small. I went to bed a half an hour early last night, but when you think about it from the perspective of the consequences to future you versus the freedoms that future you will experience, it is not a small decision at all. It is a huge win and something you should absolutely high-five yourself for.
It's amazing how kind that feels too, because I think so many of us are socialized to keep boundaries or hold ourselves accountable. I mean, even that, like the wording for me, hold myself accountable, feels really scary because of how I was taught to do that, which was really by threat of punishment or cruelty or making myself a problem to be fixed. And thinking about what you're free, you know, how you're free to experience your day, what you're free to do based on that decision is such a delicious way to think about it.
It is. And it doesn't mean that your day is going to go well. Okay. Going to bed earlier doesn't mean that I'm not going to wake up and my kid is going to be in a perfect mood and I'm not going to have any emergency emails. But what it means is that I will be free to navigate those situations from a more expansive, energetic capacity. And that is huge. Whatever comes up in that day, I know I will be better prepared to face it because of the very small but kind decision I made for myself the night before. Yes.
So I'm realizing now that all of these boundary questions that I have here are all self-boundaries.
Are they?
right. Well, kind of. I mean, indirectly.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of times when it comes to boundaries, and I'd be curious if you think, it's like the first boundary that you're setting is with yourself about mm-hmm. what you find acceptable, what you desire. First having that agreement with yourself before you even communicate it to anyone else.
Yes. You know, one of the things I say so often in the book and in so many communications I have with readers who send me their boundary scenarios is, you have to get incredibly clear on what your limit is before you attempt to communicate that to somebody else. Very often people will come to me with a scenario and say, this relationship isn't feeling good. I have an example of somebody who was asked to go to all of their parents' houses on the very holiday day. On Christmas Day, they were expected at all four sets of parents' homes. And she said, I cannot do that this year. I can't do it. And so, okay, tell me what about this scenario is so overwhelming. Tell me what about it feels like you are being pushed over your limit. And when we went through it, it turns out it wasn't the visiting of four different houses in a single day. She actually enjoyed that part. She liked seeing them. The issue was that at one house in particular, the parents made her feel guilty when it was time to leave and always tried to get her to stick around later and made her feel bad for going to the opposite parent's home. That was where she needed to set the boundary. It wasn't that she wasn't willing to make these drives or she wasn't willing to see everyone. So even in the case of self-boundaries, or even when you think maybe it's a boundary you need to set with someone else, the first question you need to ask is, what specifically is my limit here? Where do I need to set the limit? And then your question could be, is this a limit I need to set with myself first? And then realize that there's a piece of this that I need to communicate with someone else.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, having that increased capacity, I mean, I know it was just an example about going to bed early, but for me, it's a real example of having that increased capacity of that extra half an hour of sleep to have the energy to communicate with myself about what I actually mm-hmm. want instead of just, you know, run my day on default.
Yes, because when I stay, and I'm saying me, because I gave that example because that's my example too. When I stay up late, scrolling through Netflix or TikTok or whatever screen I happen to be on, it is because I have purposely disconnected from myself. I have said, no. I know my body, it's like that meme where your body is like, we need water, we need sleep. And you're like, I don't know what it could be. If I disconnect from myself, that's when I am scrolling Netflix or TikTok. I'm not taking a moment to check in and ask for what I need. And even just the fact of taking a moment to say, okay, what do I really need in this moment? Like, that is the win. It's not even, is it going to bed early? Sure, that's huge. That's a huge benefit. But the fact that I stopped to ask myself, okay, but what do I need? Let's just call that like the initial win. That's huge. And if we can learn to make that more of a habit, I think that's going to make all of these conversations, whether it's with ourselves or other people, so much easier.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Okay. So the next one is another self-boundary, but with somebody who gives all, she says, I give all of my time away. Mm-hmm. The things I schedule for myself always feel optional. And when I know someone else needs me, I find myself pushing those things to the back burner. And then I end up feeling resentful because I don't do the things that I really wanted to do. And I'm stuck in this pattern.
Yeah. There is a Byron, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Byron Katie. She wrote the book Loving What Is. She has this practice called Four Questions, where you're sort of identifying your story about a situation from the actual situation that's happening. And one of the things my therapist says to me all the time is that we prefer the situation we are in, even if it is hell, to the unknown. The unknown is so scary and uncomfortable that we would rather just be in the discomfort that we're in, even if it's awful, than like take that new step. And that's immediately what I thought of when I think of this idea. I'm hearing things in here like, I know someone else needs me. And I would say, well, is that true? Does that person really need you? There are very few situations in my life where me not showing up for that person is like a serious issue. Most of the time, it's either they're asking something of me and I could show up in this way, or I could show up in a different way, or I could show up not at all, or I'm imagining that I'm the only one who can step in and fix this situation, provide support in this situation, handle this situation. And to be honest, that's not at all true. So, you know, I think the first thing I'm thinking about here is that you are constantly giving your time away and then you end up feeling resentful. And that leads to this like shame cycle, this guilt cycle. And of course, that is not at all productive. One of the first very practical things I would say is, are you building in margins into your life? I love this idea of purposefully building in margins so that my time and energy is not ever 100% accounted for the moment I wake up in the morning. So when I tell my son it's time for breakfast, we have 10 extra minutes in there in case he dawdles or we get delayed. When I schedule a Zoom meeting, I don't ever schedule them back to back. I make sure there's at least 10 minutes in between so that I have time to go to the bathroom or have a quick snack. Or if the meeting runs over, I'm not like dominoing the rest of my day. So thinking about this idea of, can I start building small margins into my day? Maybe that means waking up 10 minutes earlier and having 10 minutes to yourself to start your day off feeling proactive instead of reactive. You know, maybe it means even though your family would, you know, love for you to participate in the board game after dinner, like, no, spouse is in charge of that right now. I'm going to go take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes and do some tidying or organizing or have some quiet time. I think there are ways to build in margins conscientiously throughout the day, even if it's 5 minutes here or there, that might help in this situation. The other thing is that honestly, you have to recognize that your needs matter. Your energy matters. You cannot keep lighting yourself on fire to keep other people warm, as the saying goes. You can't do it for other people, and you cannot continue to abandon yourself just to help other people. You can't pour from an empty cup. And if you really want to be there effectively for other people in your life, if you want to have something to give to your friends, to your family, to your kids, to your work colleagues, you have to make sure that you are pouring from a cup that is adequately full. And if you're not, to be honest, you're giving all of your time away to somebody else, but it's not particularly effective because you don't have a lot of capacity and you're never taking a moment to refill your own cup. So I think the way you start doing this, I realize this doesn't come naturally to you. I understand it's uncomfortable. I understand that you might have to do work with yourself or with a therapist or a counselor about the fact that you are worthy of having needs and taking care of your needs, but start small. Find a small space in which you can preserve your time just for you and recognize that the world doesn't fall apart. Everyone goes on. Everyone is fine. You can take that 5 minutes in the morning. You can take that 5 minutes in the evening. You can say no to that thing that someone asked you to do that is not necessary for you to be there. It was just an invitation. And you can say no for no reason other than I don't want to. And I can give you a dozen different really kind ways to say that. But practice. Take that small opportunity to say, I choose me. And see how it feels and see if it feels uncomfortable and explore what that discomfort looks like and why. And maybe work through that or process that in your therapy or in your journaling. But you don't have to start off with like the biggest things possible. I think with boundaries, when it comes to boundaries, people feel like they need to, like if they are used to being people pleasers, they kind of like immediately gravitate towards the nuclear option where you just throw a huge wall up and burn it all down. And that's not at all where you need to start. And I don't think that's healthy for you or your relationships. You can start small, but I need you to get some small wins here where you have an example of protecting your time and your space and your peace and see that it's okay. I need that for you. You need to build that self-confidence.
Beautiful. When I first read this question, I had a gut reaction because this used to be me 100%. And the gut reaction was to that part where I know someone else needs me. And I love that you brought that Byron Katie question in because I use those myself. But that piece of one of the boundaries I have learned to set in relationships in my own life is, if you need something from me, you're going to have to ask me directly. And I'm no longer willing, even though I'm really good at it, that those skills are very honed for me of just kind of intuiting what people need all of the time, that I am, the boundary I set with myself is that I'm not intentionally receiving that information, you know, and if I do notice, I just kind of tuck it away and remind myself that until that person asks me directly, I don't have to use my kind of spidey skills on them. But then the boundary with other people and saying, like, you're going to have to ask. That doesn't mean I'm going to say yes, but that's the first step. The first step is you, like, walking yourself in the front door and saying what you need, which for me, everybody in my life was used to me just doing the things that they wanted and needed. So this was a really big shift. It was a really, you know, a significant relationship negotiation. And those boundaries, which are like, we're going to do things differently than we've been doing them before, and it's going to be better, but yeah, it might be rough for a little.
I mean, when my husband and I got together, you know, five years ago now, one of the things we talked about initially was, like, I say what I mean and I mean what I say. So when you say to me, are you mad? I will think about it for a moment. And if I say no, you can trust that I am not mad. If you are upset with me and you demonstrate that by making a face or kind of huffing around the house, like, we don't have a problem. We don't have a problem until you tell me that you are upset, because I am not a mind reader and I am not going to attempt to infer. And that's worked incredibly well for us. So I think that communication is, again, incredibly kind. I also want to point out to this original questioner that this is not like an all or nothing game. So when someone asks me to do a speaking engagement, I will say, here is my rate for your speaking engagement. And if they come back and they say, oh, sorry, we can't afford that, I will come back and say, okay, what is your budget? Maybe we can find a way to work together in a way that works for your budget. I will adjust the scope of what I'm delivering to meet your budget. You can do that with boundaries too. Somebody says to you, I need you to do this. You say, okay, give me a minute to think about that, please, or let me let you know tomorrow. You come back to them and say, okay, I've, like, given my energetic capacity, given my work schedule, whatever the reason is, I can't do that for you, but I could do this, this, or this. Would any of those be helpful? Now, if you have no capacity to assist in this moment, absolutely, please say that. Only offer things that you're able to offer genuinely and without resentment. But it's not an all or nothing. If my sister is like, I'm desperately in need for, like, a vent session right now, I'm drowning, I will say to her, I can't right now. I have this podcast interview in 5 minutes. I really need to stay prepped for it. As soon as I get off this call, I am yours. Will that work for you? Or, I can't do this right now. I am having a really hard day navigating my own depression. Can I send you a couple funny memes and check in with you in the morning? And I will offer what I can offer, and she will tell me if that is enough, or she will say, nope, that's not enough for me right now. And she'll know that she needs to find someone else to satisfy that need for her. And that is an incredibly kind way to communicate.
I love that. I think that's so, so useful. And so much of what you offer, this is like, before I knew, I'm so glad that you wrote a book on boundaries, but before I knew you were going to write a book on boundaries, even just what you would share on Instagram, I would always share, because it was so tangibly applicable. You really have a skill for that.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
So the next question that I have, at the time of recording this, you wrote an email recently this week, which was fantastic. And this listener was referencing that email. So it was about being in conflict with other people. And you wrote in that email that you don't have to be in conflict with people who are in conflict with you, which blew all of our minds, pretty much, I think. And she said, I know she wrote about this in the email, but conflict really scares me. So even if I don't have to be in conflict with someone else, how do I hold that boundary not to engage while also taking care of the fear feelings that I have about someone being mad at me?
Mm-hmm. That's a really, really good question, a very insightful question. And I did, I wrote this entire email about the fact that, like, just because someone is mad at you or upset with you does not mean you need to accept their invitation into the conflict. And I explained exactly how, you know, a kind way to do that, unkind ways to do that. This really reminds me of the relationship that I have with my husband. He is an anxious attachment style. He really does get nervous and gets anxious at any sign of conflict. And so when we would have an argument or disagreement on something, almost immediately his reaction would be like, okay, well then I guess this isn't going to work out. And I'm like, what? Wait a minute. Like, we're just, you know, we're having this discussion about this thing. What I realized was that he and I needed to have conversations about trusting each other and having faith in the relationship when we weren't in conflict. So, you know, we came together and I said, like, look, we're going to argue. We're not always going to see things eye to eye. Remember that we solve things as a team. Neither of us are trying to win. Like, we're on the same team. And know that no matter how heated the argument gets, or if I get mad, or if we need to take hours away from each other so we don't say something dumb, that is not a statement to the strength of our relationship. I am asking you to trust that our relationship is so strong that we can argue, find a solution together, and it doesn't impact the stability of our relationship. And that was a really important place to get to. And it didn't happen, of course, right away. You can't just say that and have someone go, oh, okay, that makes sense. I had to demonstrate it. So that meant that when we were in conflict, recognizing that he had an anxious attachment style, I would over-communicate, babe, I need 5 minutes right now. And I promise I'm not abandoning you or this conversation, but I'm pretty heated right now. And I tend to say things in the heat of the moment that I know I won't be happy with. If I could take 5 minutes by myself, I could come back and I guarantee you we'll talk about this like in a much healthier way. So that was one of the ways that I expressed what was happening for me in conversations and conflict so that he didn't get nervous. I don't know if this person's partner is that self-aware or willing to engage, but you can absolutely self-soothe in the face of conflict. So you can recognize and acknowledge, and I don't want you to ignore the fact that you're really uncomfortable and that conflict is scary. In fact, you could even say that out loud. I recognize that we're in conflict right now, and I got to tell you, it is really freaking me out. I'm not necessarily comfortable with conflict, but I'm committed to resolving this with you as a team. Feel free to say that. You know, you never know. Your partner may come back with a reassurance in that moment that's going to make you feel better. But then you can also, whether you're in the conflict or in moments outside of it, you know, work through again with your therapist. Like, what am I feeling when I'm in conflict? What memories are this bringing up? Have I been abandoned before? Have I been gaslit before not to trust myself and my own feelings? Like, what about this conflict makes me so uncomfortable? And how can I tend to myself and self-soothe in this moment so that I can show up and resolve this conflict in a way that truly serves the partnership while also acknowledging that, like, this is a scary and delicate place for this? I'm not a therapist. You would be way better suited, I think, to talk to someone through that kind of a conversation. But what I'm really sensing in this moment is conflict is uncomfortable. Absolutely. It would not do you any good to try to ignore or not acknowledge that fact. But I think you don't need to, nor should you try to rely on your partner for reassurance in that moment. I would look for ways to try to bring that reassurance to yourself that even in conflict, you are safe, you are protected, you can trust yourself, and you will resolve this in a way that is healthy for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. As I have an anxious attachment style myself, and conflict is terrifying for me, and I've had to learn a lot of those self-soothing things. But I think something that really spoke to me in that is that idea of having conversations with the people you're in relationship with outside of conflict about how you want to be in conflict together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We established, my husband and I established rules of engagement early on in our relationship, things that we were and were not going to do when we were in conflict. Things like, we will never use mean words. We will, I know what my husband's worst nightmare buttons are. I know the words that would absolutely decimate him because of his past trauma and history. We have agreed never to use those words. We've agreed to take time off anytime we need it for any reason, because we assume that it is for the good of the relationship and the discussion. Coming up with those kind of, you know, maybe some couples have the don't go to bed mad. We don't have that. We've gone to bed mad, and like, that's okay for us. But I think coming up with this idea of rules of engagement early on can be very helpful and also reassuring.
Oh, I love that idea. My partner does not care about going to bed angry.
Yeah.
And I formerly had that rule of, you know, just like kind of duking it out until late in the night. And I always had partners before who were perfectly happy to duke it out with me, like until the sun came up, literally.
Yeah.
And yeah. It is amazing when you are in the, you know, outside of conflict moments to have that, also that nuanced understanding of, you know, my way doesn't actually really serve me. It comes naturally to me, absolutely, to like fight it out until we're like able to say that, you know, whatever it is, the fight's over. But again, speaking to that first example you gave, is like, we have so much more insight in the morning after we have slept through the night than we will.
Yes.
Anyway, I mean, I have a personal boundary with myself that I very much try to maintain, even though it's challenging, because I get, especially like after 9 o'clock at night, sometimes really anxious. And that's when I want to talk about all of the things. And mm-hmm. I also have a boundary with myself not to talk about any of the things after 9 o'clock, because I'm
yes.
tired to yes. actually do any of it justice.
So smart. Your willpower is zapped. You are mentally exhausted. It's when I want to bring in the swirling tornado of all of the bad things that ever happened ever. And yeah, you just shouldn't do it. Yeah.
Yes. It's like asking yourself, am I tired? Am I hungry?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Am I resourced enough? And honestly, even with myself, sometimes I'll want to kind of go into a topic in my own mind that I'm yes. not resourced enough to adequately explore.
Yes.
And you just,
that is so smart. Yes.
Can't do it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think I, you know, all the time I tell people who are asking me questions, if your best friend was talking to you about this, what would you tell them? You would never say to your best friend, yes, I think 9 p.m. is a great time to dive back into that like dumb thing you said earlier today on that work call and wondering how it's going to affect your performance or the fight that you're in the middle of with your friend. You would never tell your best friend that. So I like to use that best friend rule a lot when I'm talking about like, okay, am I talking to myself the way I would talk to someone else? And if not, why am I not giving myself that same grace?
Yeah. Well, and acknowledging too that so many of us have been conditioned to be vigilant and responsive around the clock. And such a gift that we can give to ourselves is like, hey, I try to turn my phone off between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. Like I need 12 hours out of the day where other people aren't in my mind and I'm not, you know, gonna be, have a news story kind of like sneak up on me when it's gonna completely wreck my peace, completely wreck my sleep. And having those kinds of, I don't even think about it as a boundary. I think about it more like a guideline because probably half the time I don't follow it, but it's like best practices for being in my body.
Yeah. That's such a good way to put it. I like that so much. Yes.
So I'm curious if there are any boundaries that you've set in your own life recently that required some adjustment, because I think there's a lot of perfectionism that goes into this idea of like, I have to come up with just the perfect thing to say, just the perfect boundary that will be foolproof. And instead, so often it's that, oh, I said that and I tested it. And then I realized, you know, I needed more of a margin, for example, or to do it yes. a different way. Is there anything that you've been working with that's required some realignment?
Oh, yeah. You know, you've hit on such an important point. And another potential misconception about boundaries is that boundaries are rigid. Once you set a boundary, that is the boundary that you live with from now until the end of time. And you don't ever revisit it and you don't ever relax it. And I think nothing is further from the truth. Things change. You change. Your goals change. Your sense of safety changes. Your relationship changes. So I'll give you an example. I had to set a boundary with my parents a while back because they overstepped in a major way around my co-parenting relationship with my son's dad. They inserted themselves in. They shared some opinions about how we should be co-parenting in a way that was like a super overstep and left me really mad. So I set a boundary with them. We will not be discussing this. Do not ask me anymore how it's going. Don't even bring his name up. My co-parenting is now not a subject of discussion that I will be entertaining. Now, I can't keep them from talking about my co-parenting relationship amongst themselves, but I would not be party to that discussion. That was received loud and clear. Boundary respected from day one. We are all now in a different place 3 years later. My son is in a very different place. He's far more secure. He's less anxious about going back and forth between households. We've established a much better routine around that. My relationship with my co-parent continues to improve in terms of we, you know, still communicate really well. We still help each other out. My parents have understood why crossing that line was so problematic. And I have since relaxed that boundary. So now they will say things like, you know, how are things going there? And I will answer them in more detail than I have in the past because their understanding has changed. My context has changed and the situation has changed. So I think it's really important to constantly reevaluate. This is the boundary I set. Is this the boundary I still need? Is this the boundary that is still best serving the relationship? Is it best serving me and the relationship I have? And in this case, relaxing it felt like a deeper connection with my parents, a better sense of pride in that I was able to share better news now than I was a couple years ago when they inserted themselves, and just an easier relationship with my son now that he's older and it makes sense for him to want to share about his life at his dad's. It was the right thing to do. And I think if I had been super rigid about it, that boundary would have perhaps turned to a place of being less healthy than it is now since I've relaxed it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's such a beautiful example. And it's true. So many of us believe, like, not only I have to set the perfect boundary, but once I've set it, that's it. Like, set it and forget it. And the reminder that we're always in conversation with ourselves, always in conversation with our boundaries, making sure that things still work or fit is just so beautifully put. And I think resonant for me, certainly. So thank you.
Yeah, happy to share.
All right, Melissa. Well, I could ask you boundary questions all day long, but I know that we can't keep you forever. I know that at the time of airing this, your book will have just come out. Is there any last words you want to tell us about why we should pick it up immediately?
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think one of the things that always frustrated me in all of my research on boundaries, the books I'd read, the research articles, the scientific papers from educators and researchers and therapists and scientists, is that I would hear about a boundary scenario. I would think, well, I have that situation. I would read all about it and why the boundary would be so helpful and all the areas that it was going to, you know, bring me freedom. And then it wouldn't tell me how to say it. And I really think people struggle. They're on board. Like, yes, I want to set a boundary with this in-law or this coworker or my romantic partner here. But how do I say it in a way that still feels kind? And how do I say it like without directly reverting to the nuclear option? And so, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do in the book was tell you exactly how to say it, which is why I have more than 130 scripts in categories that I've labeled green, yellow, or red. Green for the most gentle boundary language, and red if you really, after time and continued reinforcement, need to like really hold that boundary firmly. And I hope that those scripts are going to be what people feel comfortable literally copying and pasting in their real life. I want you to know not just the benefits of boundaries and what it will bring to your life and all of the freedoms that it will bring, but I want you to know how to do it so that you can start practicing in a way that feels really authentic and really organic to your relationships. So hopefully people find the scripts as helpful as my Instagram readers have in the past.
Yes. You know, it strikes me now that this is why I love your work so much, exactly, is that so many of us don't have a well-cultivated realm of possibility for what a healthy boundary even looks like because we haven't had role models for it. And we learn by relating. We learn by experiencing. And so if you haven't ever experienced somebody who is particularly adept at setting and holding boundaries in a clear and kind way, then yeah, you don't know how to do that. I mean, that's exactly how we learn. Yeah, and it's true that your work really offers that modeling in such a beautiful way.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you. I will put, of course, all of the ways to find you in the show notes, and we're all going to be reading your book and loving up all those scripts.
I can't wait. I love hearing stories from people who are setting boundaries, holding boundaries, boundary success stories. Those are my favorite. So send them all my way.
Awesome. Will do.
Thanks, Mara.
Thanks for listening to the Needy Podcast with Mara Glatzel. If you want my support in learning how to nourish your needs, dance on over to theneedypodcast.com to take my quiz to figure out what you need right now and how to meet those needs with a greater sense of ease and confidence. If you love today's show, please leave us a review on iTunes and consider joining the Needy Inner Circle, where your monthly contribution enables us to continue bringing you the delicious conversations you adore without advertisement or interruption. To become a member of the Needy Inner Circle and gain access to the inspiring behind-the-scenes treats we've whipped up for you, skip to theneedypodcast.com. And, as always, permission loves company. So if there's a human in your life that you think would benefit from this conversation, I would be so grateful if you would share it with them. Thank you.